to the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation. We don't have Tristan Vick with us here this week, but for our little fake radio program, we decided to bring in a professional radio host, somebody who, if you're familiar with FC Dallas, you've heard his voice before. Here with us this week is Tyler Kern. How's it going, Tyler?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, Dustin. I'm really excited to be here. And I don't know if I'm a professional. I guess so. I get paid to do it, but
well,
I don't know that...
That makes you a professional.
I guess so. I still feel like I'm stealing money. Steve and I talk about that all the time. Steve Davis, one of my radio cohorts, talk about it all the time. Just feel like we're stealing money just being able to talk about soccer on the radio. So it's I feel very, very lucky, that's for sure.
Yeah, we reap the benefits of that theft.
Well, hey, I appreciate the you guys that have listened and are kind of making the radio venture. You know, we're trying some new things with the on the radio side with FC Dallas this year, and so I appreciate those of you who have listened and given feedback and that sort of thing as to how it's gone so far. And yeah, I definitely couldn't do it without without people listening and engaging and that sort of thing. So appreciate you guys very much as well.
Yeah, for sure. So before we get into let's back it up here for a second. In the past, 9-10 days, FC Dallas has come away with 3 wins, and we pretty much got crowned champions of Los Angeles. we are the winners of the whatever they call that derby.
El Trafico.
Yeah, we are the winners of El Trafico.
Man, people bagged on that name, but I thought that was, I kind of liked it.
I think it's pretty clever. I'm not going to bag on it.
Yeah, yeah. I saw lots of Twitter bagging on it, and I wasn't into that. I liked the nickname. So go on, do what you want, LA.
Exactly. The MLS lets them do what they want. So,
yeah.
But that's a different story for a different day.
Certainly.
So before we get going, let's talk about you for a little bit. I know you are on FC Dallas Radio and on ESPN Soccer Today. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about how all that came about. How did you end up here? How did you get started in soccer and talking about soccer? Give us all of it.
Yeah, so I've been a soccer fan for a while. I didn't play growing up like a lot of people did. I played baseball, and my mom said, you know, you pick one sport and you stick with it because I'm not driving you around to a billion practices, but always loved the game. And this is going way back. I don't know how far back you want to go, but in 02, I was a young kid. I mean, I guess I was like 14 or so, and got just the worst poison ivy of all time and got put on massive amounts of steroids. And so I stayed up to all hours of the night watching the World Cup in South Korea, and just because I couldn't sleep. And so I was absolutely wired watching the best U.S. men's national team run in any World Cup, and just losing my mind the whole time. And from there, fandom just kind of grew from there. And so my wife and I met when I was at Texas A&M, and we got married and lived down there for a couple of years. And then when we moved up here, she got a great job, and I was like, if I could do anything, what would I do? And I realized I really wanted to do sports radio. And so, you know, got a job up here just as a part-time lackey, you know, just running around doing things, and ran into Steve Davis and Mark Stein one day after they did the ESPN Soccer Today show on a Sunday morning. And, was just talking to Mark and picking his brain about Manchester City, because I knew he's a big City fan. And
I
know you're Liverpool, right?
That is right.
Yeah. Stein's a big City fan, you know, and so I'm sitting there picking his brain about City and talking soccer and whatnot. And he says, you know, we could really use some help on the show. I don't know that we can pay you anything. And I said, you know what, whatever, like just to be able to work with those guys and to get to do something sports wise. This was just after the 2014 World Cup, like August 2014. And I said, you know what, whatever it takes, like I'll do it. So I did that show for a little while for free, just to get my foot in the door there. And then, you know, things have grown since then. Mark has left the show just because of stuff with ESPN. He works for the New York Times now. And so I just took over co-hosting with Steve Davis. And then from there, Steve moved over to television on the FC Dallas broadcasts because he's a really, really good analyst. Mm-hmm. That opened up a spot on FC Dallas Radio that I was more than happy to jump in as well. And so things have really just fallen in my lap in odd ways. And I'm extremely excited about how things have worked out and love getting to do this, this sort of thing and talk soccer earlier. You know, like I said earlier, just feel immensely blessed to have this opportunity. So that's kind of how I happened into the two roles that I have, talking soccer on a pretty regular basis.
Had you ever done any play by play before? Or is this your first gig?
First gig. And, so my first game was, I guess, March 18th of last season, a win over, New England at home, first play by play game I'd ever done. And, man, I was nervous and prepared like crazy for that game. Probably the best prepared I've ever been for a game because I spent a month leading up to that broadcast researching New England and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, that was my first broadcast. I've probably done 15 to 20 now and have loved every second of it for sure.
Yeah, I have so much respect for you guys doing that because, you know, I do my little radio or podcast here and you know, I sometimes even write down some of the things I'm going to say and I just stumble over my words all the time. I have the luxury of being able to edit before I actually publish it. And you guys are just out there, you know, speaking clearly and fluently and in soccer language, like without even trying. And like, I'm super impressed by the stuff you guys do.
Well, I really appreciate that. There are times when I listen back and think it sounds anything but that. So I definitely appreciate that for sure. You know, it's a constant thing where I'm trying to improve and, you know, I get to rub shoulders with, Mark Folliwell on a regular basis, who I think is just an absolute legend and, get to pick his brain on things. And so it's a constant series of just trying to get better at things. And so I appreciate what you said though. That's, that means a lot.
Okay. And here is another episode. Here is where I get to edit it myself out again. I had like four thoughts go through my head at once. All right. So
that happens to me almost every time a goal is scored. Like I think my goal calls are like the worst part of my, my broadcasting because, you know, a shot will happen and it'll get deflected. Like the Ziegler goal, against LAFC, you know, it's a short, set piece taken by Diaz over to Cannon. Cannon rockets the ball, it deflects off of someone, pops up in the air, Ziegler heads it home. But as that's happening, I'm trying to say everything at once. I'm like, every time I go back and listen, I'm like, oh my gosh, I sound like a panicked 12-year-old. But you know,
I know that feeling very well. Well, that does segue us nicely into talking about the games.
Yeah. Let's do that.
That was almost good. So I'm not going to lie. Between now and when we played LA Galaxy, I kind of don't remember that game very much. So I'd like to start off talking about like some themes that have kind of showed up over the last couple games.
Sure.
So obviously we were at one point tops in the West. So it seems as if Oscar's got this side dialed in. Do you think that this is going to be here to stay, or do you think this is a blip or a fluke, or are we going to be contenders throughout the whole season?
Look, I think I think what happened at the end of last season is fresh in everyone's mind, right? So everyone's a little freaked out by that. And, yes. You know, I think you can chalk what happened at the end of 2017 up to a lot of different things. I think if you just try to pinpoint one thing, you're probably missing a myriad of other issues that went on with this club, whether it was, players not performing well down the stretch for whatever different reason. Some people seem to have honed in on locker room issues. Some people seem to have honed in on, transfer drama and things of that nature. I would say that Matt Hedges wasn't his best after coming back from the Gold Cup. Kellen Acosta wasn't his best after coming back from the Gold Cup. I think we all acknowledge that Mauro Diaz was not quite back to being Mauro Diaz last season. So there are a lot of, you know, all of those issues packed into the end of last season. I look at this team this year and think that they're much, much more capable of handling an entire season's worth of games and whatever MLS is going to throw at this team, mainly because I think the depth and the versatility of the roster is much improved compared over last season. And I think this is where we've really seen some growth in Oscar Perea over last year. Last season, it was basically, if Mauro Diaz is healthy, we're going to roll out in a 4-2-3-1 with Diaz there in the middle, come hell or high water. If he's not healthy, we're rolling out in a 4-4-2 with Guerreiro and Acosta. And that's basically how we're going to play, right? And so we came into this season, with Oscar putting a massive priority on having different ways to play, having different clubs in the bag, if you will, to steal an analogy from golf. They tried the 3-5-2 in CONCACAF Champions League, and that did not work out, but I think it was a worthwhile experiment. Looking back now, and then coming up to these games recently, he's rolled out a 4-3-3 with three central midfielders and Diaz out on a wing. And you know what? I think that's an interesting wrinkle. I think it's a fun variation on what he's done in the past because it accomplishes a couple of different goals. And so I think we're seeing an evolution of Oscar where he's got this team being able to play multiple different ways. You can go to Toronto against a team that's desperate to get a win and grind out a result. You can put up three goals on a team like the LA Galaxy who struggled to defend. They can play a lot of different ways and have a lot of different personnel at their disposal to be able to roll out in different ways. So I think that they're better equipped to handle those challenges this season rather than last. So I do think it's here to stay. Now, do I think that they're going to end up as a 1 or 2 seed in the West? Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. I honestly think that the defense has been much solidified over last season. I know that Reto Ziegler is someone that we want to talk about here in a second. So I think that he's been fantastic. So I think the defense has been much improved. And I think last season what we saw is they gave up 8 more goals in 2017 than they did in 2016. They only scored 2 fewer. So I think a lot of people in the offseason really wanted to focus on the attack, but I think the defense is what needed solidifying. And I think that credit to Fernando for bringing in some defenders and for Oscar for having the guts to roll out Reggie Cannon as a 19-year-old.
Yeah, so much there. I think you've got a good point about, you know, Oscar being much more willing to be more flexible. I felt like last year he was kind of constrained by, you know, these are my big names. I pay these people the most. Therefore, I have to put them on the field.
Yeah.
And this season, you know, Diaz is on the bench. Barrios is on the bench. You know, we've got these big names, like almost nailed on starters from last season, just sitting on the bench and maybe not even getting into the game, you know, and it's paying dividends for sure.
What a luxury, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that's actually going to be helpful down the road, you know, because one of the things that you mentioned is how poor some of the players looked in the second half of the season because after they came back from the Gold Cup. And I think it's just, they were just all knackered, you know, it was just.
Sure.
You know, especially a Rudy by the end of the season, man, that guy looked so tired.
Yeah, he looked absolutely exhausted. And another kind of byproduct of what we're talking about is that there's competition for spots. So if you act disinterested or playing in a way that seems to suggest that you're not fully invested, which may have been the case last year. I don't know whether or not it was. I can't climb inside the heads of players to know whether or not they were disinterested or frustrated about this or that or whatever. But if you are Carlos Guerrero, who struggled at the end of 2017, I thought. Then you know that you've got Ja'Cory Hayes right over your shoulder that can take your spot. And all of a sudden you're not a starter anymore. You're not pushing to get into the Ecuadorian national team. All of a sudden you're just fighting for your job at FC Dallas. Yep. So I think that that's a natural byproduct of having this flexibility and also having some depth with some guys that maybe have surprised us so far this season.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting, not only from game to game, do they switch formations, but even when we don't have the ball and when we have the ball, they go from that 4-3-3 into a 4-4-2 with Lamont of all people playing defense in the two banks of four, trying to kill off a game. I think it's just overall, like you said, so much more flexibility this year, and hopefully that just keeps on right on rolling. Pardon the pun.
No, I absolutely agree, and so. There are a lot of different ways to take that, whether it's, you know, finding ways that for Lamont to be a useful player, even if he's not scoring goals at the back post, which seems to be all that he was useful for last year, or having the flexibility to leave Barrios on the bench and then bring him in at the end of the game the other night against LAFC just to relieve some of that pressure, right? I think that I think Oscar learned from those nervy endings to the LA and Toronto games, LA Galaxy and Toronto games.
You have to specify now.
Yeah, I know, right? It's that's a pain. No, but you know, the ending to those two games, it felt like FC Dallas was so packed in and just trying to withstand the late charges and deal with all the pressure and with no real way to relieve it. And so then having the ability to bring Mikey Barrios off the bench against the Galaxy, against LAFC. Jeez, that's going to be ridiculous. having the versatility to be able to bring Mikey Barrios in against LAFC on Saturday, allowed them just this natural outlet, right? So you win the ball back, and rather than just punting it upfield, suddenly you're playing balls down the right channel for Michael Barrios to run onto and to get in behind that defense. And we saw that it caused LAFC trouble. And then FC Dallas could defend further up the field rather than bunkering in at the back and relying on Jesse Gonzalez's questionable decision making and last ditch defending.
Yeah, I just watched the highlights again, and that header that he did on the edge of the box. Like, what?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole because it might make my head hurt. It's already close to it as it is.
I understand.
But yeah, so let's talk about Barrios for a second.
Sure.
So is he broken?
Not beyond repair, I don't think. I mean, honestly, this feels like a guy that's lacking confidence right now, right? He's yes, getting in dangerous for sure. opportunities, getting in dangerous spots, and just not finishing those opportunities, and seems to be indecisive, right?
Yeah. We had a listener question. How do we fix Mikey Barrios? Sure. And have other teams just caught on to the fact that he had one move? That's Rick Ellis. Thanks for the question, Rick. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I don't think he just has that one move. You know, he's got the speed, but he showed last year that he can cross, and he got that right. assist in the LAFC game. No, LA Galaxy. I'm confused.
It was the third goal in the Galaxy game that Guerrero put away. And
yes.
Yeah. The deflected, the shot that was partially saved and then headed home by Guerrero for his first goal in his, I think, 69th MLS appearance. So
yes,
nice for Guerrero. But yeah, so I don't think he just has one move, right?
Definitely not a one trick pony.
Yeah. And I understand where Rick is coming from. Like if your goal is to beat everybody to the end line and just sprint past them, that way, then yeah, it's on some level, you know, people can prepare for that and just kind of understand that's what you're doing. But it's not like he hasn't had opportunities, right? He's had those chances. And I think the most concerning player, the thing that seems to indicate to me that he doesn't have confidence right now, is in the Toronto game. He was played through on a really nice ball. I don't remember who played it.
We'll just go out on a limb and say Diaz.
It's always somewhat safe. Yeah. So he's played in on goal, and he has run past Michael Bradley, and he collects the ball, and he has a decision. Do I burn Michael Bradley and just run straight at Clint Irwin, Toronto's goalkeeper? Or, and this is what he chose to do, even though he's already past Michael Bradley, holds it up and turns it back. And I think Michael Barrios last year, or even 2016 Michael Barrios, just absolutely flat burns Michael Bradley, or cuts in front of him and forces Bradley to either make a foul or cuts Bradley completely out of the play at that point. And so it just seems to me that he just needs one of these to go in. He just needs to get lucky. He tried to put a couple between the legs of Clint Irwin, that didn't work. I think he just needs a lucky bounce or two, and then you'll see a guy get going. Sometimes that just happens. And look, FC Dallas is chock full of really streaky players, and Michael Barrios is one of them. Maxi Rudy is notoriously streaky, but Michael yes. Barrios is one of them. At this point, actually, I think through 12 games last season, this was part of what I was looking up for as prep for the LAFC game. Through 12 games in 2017. I think he had a goal and three assists at that point, which isn't outstanding output either necessarily. And then in his 13th game of the season was that game where they beat RSL 6-2, and he had three assists in that game. So, you know, this stuff happens, and and he has competition now, and so he's not getting every minute of every game. He's got Mosquera, he's got Lama, and now he's got Diaz as a winger to contend with. So there are other options, and so I firmly believe that at some point Mikey will get things back going. I don't think he's broken beyond repair. I don't think he's been figured out, because I don't think that there are too many left backs in the league that can actually keep up with him when he's fully on and fully confident. So I think it'll come back at some point.
Yeah, I am hashtag backing Barrios.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
Let's make it a thing or not. Well, you mentioned Santiago Mascara.
Yeah.
And we also have a listener question about him. Marcus Cole asks, what are your thoughts on Mascara? So far, I'm really impressed. So,
yeah, it looked like it took Mosquera a little bit of time, the way it takes most people to integrate into the team, figure out exactly what was being asked of him by Oscar. But I remember this quote when they first signed him, Fernando Calvillo said he plays specifically how Oscar Pereira would like to play. And so I wondered exactly what that meant, but I think what it means now, having watched him a few times, is the versatility to play a lot of different places. I think it really embodies a little bit of what FC Dallas is doing this season, what Oscar Pereira has done, and what we talked about earlier. Just this ability to play out on the wing. He can play as a second striker. He can play either wing. And I do think we're starting to see him figure it out and put things together. And that goal against Toronto that Arruda ended up scoring was, I mean, almost entirely created by Mosquera, making a really, really good play, holding off Michael Bradley on the throw-in at midfield and then making the long run down the left channel, cutting a nice cross back into the box. So then he made almost an identical play against the LA Galaxy later on, just a few days later. So that didn't result in the goal, but almost the exact same type of chance. And so I think we're seeing a guy that's starting to figure it out. And I love the versatility that he brings to the team. And I'm really excited about seeing him continue to put it together going forward. I think that he can be a really dangerous piece.
I completely agree. You know, we thought having Barrios on the wing was good. It's so like you said earlier, it's a luxury to have the ability to sit Barrios and play Mascara and Roland Lamont both at the same time without having to worry about what are we going to do without Barrios, you know?
Right.
And I think for me, the moment that I remember, it was in the preseason I think it was in Arizona when they were playing the New England squad, and he just burned everybody down the left flank and then went on and scored. And we can see that, you know, teams have scouted that. And so when he gets the ball and he starts to make that break, they just start pulling him down at this point. And so, you know, it's almost like a turnover in midfield. You know, we get the free kick for free. And all he had to do was be fast one time a long time ago. So...
Yeah, and I think part of the learning process for him has been figuring out, okay, how do I play with Mauro Diaz? Where exactly? Because at first you could tell he came inside a little too often and created situations where he was crowding out Mauro Diaz, and so he needed to stay wide, receive the ball a little wider, and then you can cut inside with the ball and overlap with some other players and do some different things. But he came inside looking for the ball too much, had to learn how to stay outside, play with Mauro. And now that Mauro's playing outside, things are a little bit different. Things have changed ever so slightly. But that's still an adjustment to learn, right? And we've seen him make that adjustment. And now he certainly looks like a big contributor for FC Dallas this year.
For sure. I'm really looking forward to seeing him keep growing and see how that turns out. So another big signing that we had was Christian Coleman. And so I was just remembering back a couple of weeks ago, we had Buzz Carrick from Third Degree on, and we were kind of comparing the starts of Mascara and Coleman and what's the difference between the two, and really, you know, his confidence and it's like his their mentalities. Coleman actually got a goal in the LA Galaxy game.
He did. Yeah. He did.
And so that's, he's actually scored a couple this season so far. So that's really encouraging. But I think the big talking point from that game was that red card.
Looking
back, doesn't look like he hit him. I mean, it got rescinded. So I don't even know where to start on this. I want to talk about it, but I don't know what to say. Like, there's so many things that went wrong in that, and I don't know where to start. Let's just skip through all of the fracas and the hubbub.
Sure.
And let's talk about VAR. Okay.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of using technology to you know, make things more just and fair, but I mean, this implementation, is VAR dead on arrival here? Like
well, It can't be because we're about to see it in the World Cup. So, you know, if you think the VAR conversation's heated now, just wait a few weeks.
Oh man, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be nuts. But,
I'll put a fiver on the British getting screwed by VAR and hearing nothing but endless VAR talk from the British media.
I kind of can't wait. I'm here for that. I'm definitely here for that. So here's the thing that I think is interesting about VAR is they allow officials to have a lot of input into whether or not into what the call ends up being, right? So radio down, hey, you might want to look at this. We think that this is a situation that, you know, you need to look into and review it further. Okay, so referee goes over, has, you know, a little conference, and at the end of the day, the call still rests with the referee on the field. So on one level, you have to ask how comfortable referees are with admitting that they were wrong in the first place. Do they feel like that undermines their authority on the field or something along those lines? I've wondered that, but I was a proponent of VAR coming into it. You know, when they first rolled it out, I said, look, if you've ever complained about a bad call, you know, a missed offside, this or that, you know, whatever call it is that, that you would like to see improved, then in theory you should be for VAR. I think the rollout has been inconsistent and they have a lot of bugs to iron out with this thing. And I don't exactly know how it goes. I think one of the first steps has to be somehow improving the ability to relay information from VAR as to why a call was made, why a call was reviewed, why a call wasn't reviewed to broadcasters and to fans, so that then at least there's some kind of explanation. At least you hear the referee side on some level. Right now, there's none of that. That's frustrating. I think
isn't even the, like, not even allowed to ask the referee after the game. Like, there's if I understand correctly, after the game, if there's a question, like, then a pool reporter gets to ask one or two questions to the referee, and they're not allowed to answer VAR questions directly. Is that correct?
That's my understanding as well.
Only do we not have any accountability, like, or any information, like, on what's happened as we're going, but we're not even allowed to ask for information after the game. It's just, yeah, you're right. Something needs to change there.
Yeah, the whole thing is really frustrating, but I do think that we will be able to move through that a little bit and refine this as we go. I don't think it's dead. I think it's here to stay. I just know that there has to be some form of massive improvement going forward. And look, the inconsistency is maddening, right? Especially if you're an FC Dallas fan. Like, FC Dallas dropped points to Colorado at home last year on a goal that was rescinded for Maxi Rudy. That they rolled the replay back 45 seconds to the first change of possession. How FC Dallas got the ball. That then on a counterattack, Maxi Rudy went and scored. I mean, it's probably been more like 15 seconds, and I'm probably exaggerating a little bit. But on the initial winning of the ball, FC Dallas was called for a foul. There's not been another VAR instance where they've gone back and reviewed anything remotely similar to that. And then you look back at the Columbus game a couple weeks ago where there was a clear-cut red card where I'm trying to remember which Columbus player it was. Slaps the guy in the head. After Zlatan Ibrahimovic had just been suspended for the exact same thing, and VAR didn't review it, and he wasn't suspended, and you just think he didn't receive a red card in that match, and you sit there and you say, "How is this the case?" And so I understand it's maddening. I don't have the answers for how to fix it, but I was a proponent for it before. I waver a little bit now, but believe that there are things that they could do to improve it for sure.
I think I'm pretty well in the same boat as you on that. So
yeah, it's. You don't want a team losing because of a bad offside call or something like that. Like, if you can fix that, you should. Let's just clean up some of the other peripheral noise.
Yeah, we could talk about this for hours.
I know.
Like, well, why didn't we start with goal line technology and stuff like that? So
yeah,
we'll for the sake of everybody listening, you won't have to hear me drone on about that. We'll move right along. Okay, so. Defense. We talked about, you know, Barrios and mm-hmm. a lot of the offensive players. Let's move back to the defense. We were talking about Ziegler earlier. So Marcus Robbins, we got the Marcus Brigade on the show. Robinson asked, what's your biggest surprise performer for this season? For him, it's Reto. He's been a rock on the back line. So let's first start with talking about Reto.
Yeah.
And then let's hear about your biggest surprise performer. So
Sure.
Do you know how, like, you mentioned earlier that Fernando went out and got him. What's the story there? Like, do we know, like, how he found him and how he pursued him and everything like that? Or,
boy, I don't know the story about how that happened, but I'd love to know. Hear it. I would too. And hey, maybe get Fernando on the show and then and dive into that, because that would be awesome. But
Fernando, if you're listening, we have an open line on line one.
come on, Fernando. Fernando's always great. Always comes into the radio booth and gives us a big, you know, thumbs up or whatever, pats us on the back, because our booths are right next to each other. And so there are times during the game where I can literally feel the room next to me shake because all the guys in there with Fernando all, you know, freak out at a bad call or a bad play or something like that. And that's awesome. Fernando's great. But
that's cool to hear that, you know, the owners are actually getting into it, or not the owners, but the big wigs are getting like that into it. You look at the NFL and they show the box and everybody's sitting there all dignified.
Oh yeah. That's not the booth next to me whatsoever. In fact, this is, I don't know, inside the press box, the Wi-Fi is terrible. Just absolutely maddeningly bad. So I started plugging in just via a hard line last year. And then on the last day of the season, I had up, you know, all the different games that were meaningful to Dallas getting into the playoffs. And so towards the end of the Galaxy game, FC Dallas obviously had that in the bag. It all came down to San Jose's result. And so there's a small, thin window between the radio booth and the booth where Fernando and the rest of the technical staff sit. And so I had the stream of the San Jose game up, and they couldn't get theirs to work because they were on the Wi-Fi. And so they're all huddled around this little window between our two booths, watching it off of my computer. And while it didn't go FC Dallas's way, that was kind of a fun moment.
Yeah, I think Carter Baum told us a story about that earlier. I think it was last year, or at the end of the year. And that sounds pretty, like, even though it didn't turn our way, it does sound like a, you know, fun kind of like bonding experience between everybody up there.
Yeah, that was awesome. But
but we digress.
Yeah, Ziegler. Need to talk to Reto. So I don't know the story about how he got here. I do know that there was more of a concerted effort to look in different places for players, to vary the roster a little bit, from getting the same type of player from the same type of place repeatedly, right? Because I mean, you'd have to say that given the guys that FC Dallas brought in this offseason, that there was that concerted effort. Obviously Mosquera fit a pattern, but we know mm-hmm. that Papi's had good success with Colombian players. You know, you look at Barrios and you look at Fabian Castillo and guys like that, so you felt good about that. But the addition of Ziegler and also of Nedjalkov certainly seemed to indicate that they were making a push into a different area. And I think one of the things that FC Dallas lacked on the stretch last season, as long as we're still referencing 2017, and this is something that Steve and I have mused and talked about quite a bit and even asked different players about, was that FC Dallas just kind of has always lacked a guy that is a real, we use a curse word I won't use, but just kind of
a heartache?
Yeah, a grab you by the collar guy when you mess up, guy that's going to hold people accountable. And so to have someone with the pedigree of Ziegler, with the Juventus days, but also just so many appearances in Serie A, you know, being on Tottenham and having that experience, being a guy that we talked to him leading up to playing against LA the first time, and he talked about going up against Zlatan in Serie A before, you know, like just a guy that has those kinds of skins on the wall. Having a guy like that was going to have a big impact on the team, and it was going to come down to how he and Matt Hedges could gel. But I thought personality wise he was someone that was very necessary for this club, and he and Hedges have actually gelled way quicker than I thought they would. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think the club has called him the glue to the whole team because he can speak all the different languages. And
yeah.
So it's not just about, you know, his play. It's also about his his, like you said, his experience and his off the field demeanor as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't want to bag too much on Walker Zimmerman, but Zimmerman was a guy
I was just about to bring up Zimmerman.
He needed Zimmerman, and we saw it against Dallas for in the LAFC game. He needs that Simone. He needs Matt Hedges. He needs someone like that next to him in order for him to play at his best. He's just not. He's not the organizer. He's not the take charge guy. He's got a lot of physical prowess and a lot of tools, but he has to have a Hedges or a Simone next to him for him to really play up to his potential. And so bringing in a guy like Ziegler to replace him, I think, has been massive.
Yeah, definitely. I think last year you could see that he was trying really hard, like too hard, and he's taking too many. He's a risk taker. And then you got Matt Hedges in a position where he's like, just not only is he responsible for his position, he's also responsible for, you know, backing up and mopping up Zim's mistakes, as he, you know, overcommits and stuff. So, having somebody who is, you know, stay at home, he does take risks, but not like huge risks. Having somebody that allows Matt Hedges to take care of his own business instead of having to worry about, you know, taking care of other people's business has been a huge boon for Hedges' confidence, Hedges' play. I am also in Team Reto.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to get some more hashtags going.
Hashtag.
That's how podcasting works, right? Hashtags.
Something like that. Yeah. I think that's the key to successful podcasting is all right, I'll write the creating hashtags, which.
Okay. I'll put that on my MySpace.
I suck at that.
Okay. So before I make an even bigger fool of myself, let's move on and let's talk about swing back to the original question of, your biggest surprise performer this season.
Yeah. I think it has to be Ja'Cory Hayes, right? A guy that really didn't play all that much last season. And I'd heard really good things out of training camp, went out and saw him once, and he seemed to look really, really awesome to me. And so the injury to Kellen Acosta, while it was unfortunate for Kellen, really seemed to give Ja'Cory the opportunity that he needed to take this chance by the scruff of the neck and really perform well. And so I've continued to be extremely impressed by Ja'Cory and what he's been able to do this season. So to me, he's my biggest surprise. Just that ability to win balls, to be constantly active, to be clean in possession. And look, the NYCFC game was a mess for him, and he hasn't, I don't believe he started since that game. But I don't think it's because Oscar saying he's not good enough. I just think that with Kellen back healthy, he's come off the bench, I think, in 5 out of 6 games recently, just because he's such a good weapon to bring in at the end of games, because he's so good at winning balls, because he's really good about not giving the ball away, which is something that we do too much of at the end of games, turning the ball over in our own half. So having a guy like Ja'Cory on the field has been absolutely massive, and I don't think anybody saw him playing the role that he has carved out for himself, where he is to me a very valuable member of this team moving forward. I know some people might say, oh, like Ziegler is a surprise performer, but I would hope that a guy that you bring in is a pretty high profile signing given his pedigree and where he came from. I would hope that Ziegler performs well. You know, Reggie Cannon, you could also make an argument for, but for me, I think with Ja'Cory Hayes being a draft pick and being a guy that we didn't really see all that much last year, it's him for me.
Yeah, I personally, I think it's a toss up between Ja'Cory and Reggie. You know, with Reggie, we didn't expect he's had a pretty strong season. He's made some mistakes, but I don't think anybody really expected him to be just as strong as he's been. You know, we always have to check yourself and remember it's his first year. Whenever he makes, you know, chooses the wrong marking or whatever, but
yeah,
it's like what we see from him is very positive. But I remember the other toss up, it would be Ja'Cory Hayes, just like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's like you're reading my mind, or I'm cheating and just using what you say. but I remember last year hearing the story during training, right before Ja'Cory actually got some game time, where they were talking, Fernando was talking to some of the staff, and he's like, talking about how strong Ja'Cory's been looking and training. And then lo and behold, he got a start, and then he got the start, and then he got the red card, and we didn't see much from him after that.
But,
you know, it was just the glimpse of into, I don't think people, when they saw that, they would think that he'd turn around and have the season that he had at the beginning of the year. So hopefully we see more of him, and hopefully he continues to surprise us, and it turns from surprise into expectation.
Yeah, I totally agree. And with the way they're rotating those guys in that three-man midfield, if they continue to do something along those lines in that 4-3-3 with, you know, recently it's been Acosta, Grezo, and Ulloa, but if they rotate that out a little bit, give guys a rest, I think you'll see a lot of Ja'Cory down the stretch of the season throughout the summer. And I also think at some point you're going to see Brandon Cervena in there, not to spoil anything. But yeah, I do think at some point this summer, I think you'll see Brandon Cervena in the U.S. Open Cup match for sure. And then I think at some point you'll see him in the summertime. That's a guess on my part, but yeah. he's been very impressive.
I want to see him, and I want Jesus Ferreira to come back and play some more. I'm excited about him.
You know, I've really put off all of my Jesus Ferreira excitement until next season, mainly because injuries have kind of slowed things up as far as development goes in time with the first team and that sort of thing. So I hope he gets some USL minutes. I hope he gets pushed around by you know, grown men and that sort of thing a little bit, develops a little bit more physically, and then I think FC Dallas will have a role player on their hands, and I'm hoping he can be kind of one of those off the bench contributors in 2019. That's my projection. That's my hopeful wish.
That's probably a more reasonable take.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying you're being unreasonable. I just, I'm trying to bank on, okay, what does this team have this year and what could they use in the future and how could Jesus fit into that? And I think just growing a little bit and developing a little bit more physically, would definitely make a world of difference for him. And so I'm hopeful for 2019. And I think that's a realistic hope.
Yeah, here, dilly dilly,
dilly dilly. Yes,
is that's over with now? I think isn't. No, I still saw a commercial the other day. All right, we'll take this opportunity to switch gears a little bit and talk about tomorrow's U.S. Open Cup, and really, so this is going to come out after the Open Cup game because there's not enough hours in the day.
I understand
to edit this and then get it out. And we just got our preview for tomorrow's game out. So everybody go, I guess it'll be after the fact, but go check out Texas Soccer Radio that we teamed up with them to kind of talk about San Antonio FC. And even if the game's over, go check them out anyways. Thanks to them.
I listened to it. It was quite enjoyable. So you should do it anyways.
Those guys are good.
Also, it makes me want to go see a game there at Toyota Field. I didn't mean to interrupt. But I do. I would like to get down there and see that little stadium because it looks awesome.
Yeah, Tristan, my co-host, is he's from San Antonio, and he wanted me to ask them what type of fare they serve at the stadium, and if it's Tex-Mex, only Tex-Mex. He's like, I'm moving down there tomorrow.
That's awesome.
Anyways, so man, we're going down rabbit holes here.
I'm okay with it.
Me too. So let's talk about the Open Cup in general. Mm-hmm. Assuming that tomorrow we wake up and we are in the round of 16. What are your expectations for the team in the tournament as a whole? Do you expect us to make a push or just use it, you know, kind of as an opportunity to get some minutes for some players?
That's a really good question and one that I'm not sure exactly what the team's thinking on it is, but I do think they're going to use it as an opportunity, especially Wednesday night and then probably in the round of 16 also to use some of those guys. You know, I don't think, you know, we found out that all of the guys that have been on loan were all called back in to Frisco this past weekend. So they were all there for the LA game, LAFC game, and they were all there kind of for this week of practice and you know, the couple of days leading up to the game. So we know that the team is planning on using those guys that have been loaned out primarily. And so I think you'll see a lot of academy guys. And I think that the team will probably focus on that given the way that The team has been making an effort, I think, to rotate guys in and out of the lineup. I think you might see some guys that are on the first team that just haven't gotten a ton of minutes, or have played sparingly recently. Like, I think it's not unreasonable to expect that Jacory might play, given that he's been a sub in most of the games that he's played over the last month and a half now. So I think that's a reasonable thought. But for the most part, I think it's going to be academy guys with a couple of first teamers sprinkled in, guys that haven't played a ton. So that's what I would expect. I think if the tournament were to fall in Dallas's direction, they'd make a stronger push in the later rounds. But I think if they were to lose on Wednesday playing academy guys, I don't think it would break the team's heart, if that makes sense. I don't want that to come across sounding bad, like the team doesn't care about it. But I think they're obviously using this as an opportunity to get some of these homegrown guys minutes with Oscar's eyes on them, you know? And so I think that matters, especially in the absence of a USL team. So I think that this is an opportunity to make that happen. And I think the team is willing to take that risk. So I think that communicates a certain amount about the value that the team is placing on that tournament. It's a tournament that they've won in the past, and so in the recent past. So I don't think the largest premium is being placed on that. I think it's all about playoffs and what this team can do in October this year.
Yeah, I was on Twitter, and Steve Finn, who's at Stat Hunting, was kind of going on a little thread about playing the kids in the Open Cup, mm-hmm. and he said basically at this point in the Open Cup, your odds of winning the trophy are pretty small anyways. Might as well play your youth, because the alternative of wearing out your veterans is a terrible idea, especially with all the schedule congestion.
I totally agree with that. And I also, you know, I do radio broadcasts for FC Dallas, and I host the soccer show, and you host the soccer podcast, and people that are listening are invested enough that they go out and they find soccer content to listen to in the week and that sort of thing. So I think anybody that's listening to this, I'm going to consider you part of the soccer consuming elite in this area and even just in the country. Ooh. In general. Yeah, you can hashtag that. Just kidding. But my point in saying that is I think the percentage of fans that are just casual fans that follow clubs that really, really care about the Open Cup is small. And MLS has done research that suggests that for all the emphasis that we place on Supporter Shield, on CONCACAF Champions League, on US Open Cup, what really matters to the average fan is winning MLS Cup. And so I think, while I think a deep run in US Open Cup is great, and while I think it's the most undervalued thing in all of the American soccer landscape, I think all of those things are true. I still think the emphasis has to be, for every club, has to be on the playoffs and on that goal of winning MLS Cup. And I don't know that it can be anything else, unless you're a team like, I don't know, Seattle, that seems down and out already, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, got to find a way to get some confidence in there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my take, not just on US Open Cup, but also other endeavors that teams are going to undertake. I think it's for the elite soccer fan, and that we have a lot of these heady conversations about how much US Open Cup matters and how much CONCACAF Champions League matters and all of these other things. When that's all great, I think 5-10% of the soccer watching public is engaged in those conversations, and the rest just want your team to be good and to go to the playoffs and that sort of thing. So,
yeah. And what was interesting, was the Texas soccer radio guys who are the San Antonio SC fans, they, you know, coming from a not first division perspective, like they actually had a very similar thought. Whereas, you know, some of them, you know, do go crazy about the opportunity to be the underdog and beat the overpowered, overbearing team, whatever.
Right.
Most of them just want to go about, they're like, cool, we get to play a team from first division. All right. Let's really go back and let's win the league.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. All right. Well, that brings us really to the end of what I had for you. Oh, let's, you know what, before we go, let's, I think there's a couple extra questions.
Oh, cool.
Let's get to those from listeners. Let's see. Okay, this is a new one. Let me read it real quick, make sure. Wait. So Holden Grant asks, what does FCD have to do to get some props towards this team? Only one lost team and the first... and first in the West, and we sound like a second-rate team to the rest of the league.
Yeah, I'm reading this question right now. Okay, so look, I
took me a couple times.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what he means, and I think I understand. Look, there is one. I know I'm going to leave something out and offend somebody, but there's basically one major MLS podcast in this country, right? And it's that covers the entire scope of Major League Soccer, not just a team, but an entire that tries to cover the entire league. And that's the league's podcast, Extra Time Radio. And I listen to it and I understand. I heard I was listening to their Thursday episode last week after FC Dallas beat the LA Galaxy on Wednesday. And they spent 10 minutes talking about the Galaxy, and then it took one host coming back, you know, a few minutes later, and he spent 30 seconds saying, oh, hey, by the way, FC Dallas is a pretty good team. And that was kind of the mention that Dallas got. And so I get that frustration. I understand.
I don't really, I don't have, you know, I'm not really close to the team. I'm just a guy with a computer, as I say all the time. But I get the sense that this team actually thrives off being kind of going under the radar and not having those expectations. I mean, you're in Frisco, you can go to the mall and no one's going to know who you are. It allows you to basically be who you are and not who people want you to be. And I think that not having that expectations actually plays to our hands. So not getting that props, I think it actually might be a good thing.
Yeah. And, I think you're right about that. I think FC Dallas did get some props a few years ago when they were doing it with, and they still are doing it with a bunch of academy guys. It's just that it's not new anymore. So, you know, I think a lot of people are still waiting to see if this is legit, right? Kind of like what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. Can this actually stick this season, or is FC Dallas going to do the same thing as last year? And also just there's not, you know, Dallas is not in New York or LA. And then they aren't the new darlings of the league, the new shiny toy, whether it's Atlanta. You know, a few years before that, it was Orlando. And before that, it was Portland. And before that, it was, you know, there's a new darling every year now. And now it's going to be Cincinnati, where they come in and they've gotten shiny new toys and that sort of thing. And Dallas isn't that. But I think you're right. I think they do thrive in that role. And you know what? Fine. Underestimate this team, I think, at your peril. Because I do think they've got a lot of quality, and I think Oscar Pereira is showing that that he's a fantastic coach. And look, there's only one coach in MLS history that has won 60 points in back-to-back seasons, and it's Oscar Pereira. So, you know, I think that matters for something. So I would tell fans, don't let it bug you down. You know, it whether or not your team gets written about, I understand the frustration and I get that, but enjoy this team for what it is, and understand that most weekends, I think Matt Doyle wrote this in a column, FC Dallas is going to send their fans home happy most weekends with a win. So enjoy that.
For sure. All right. So Trent Dismuki, I don't know if he's pronouncing that right.
No idea.
he says, how unbearable is soccer? Know everything, Steve Davis 90. I talked to him a little bit. He meant that as good natured ribbing. So let me rephrase it. Let me rephrase it a little bit. So like, A, how is it working with somebody who is as knowledgeable as Steve? And B, like, how lucky are we to have the soccer minds and soccer talent in this market that we have between, you know, Steve Davis and Mark and you and you know, all of the people. I'm gonna it's my turn to piss people off and leave somebody off. You know, Bob Sturm.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the kick around guys, Andy Swift, Peter Welpton.
Oh, yes.
Buzz, right, there you go. All the guys on Third Degree, the coverage that we have locally is, I don't know, cause I don't go to a bunch of different markets or anything like that. But, just in terms of great minds and great coverage and great writing about FC Dallas, we've got two, you know, two shows on the radio that are just dedicated to soccer in DFW. You know, we've got you guys doing your thing. There's the 19th Minute doing their thing. You know, like there's a lot of stuff. And so that's, we are incredibly lucky to have that. And as far as Steve goes, the guy's a freaking encyclopedia of U.S. soccer knowledge, whether it's U.S. men's national team or MLS. He can tell you stories from just the very first days of Major League Soccer. And I've sat around and listened to he and Andy Swift, who was the general manager for FC Dallas back in some of the early days and now runs the Dallas Cup. I've sat there and drank beers with those guys and listened to them tell incredible stories just about those first years of the team and waiting for Garth Lagerwey, who was drunk, to get back and catch the team bus before they left for the airport the next morning. just crazy awesome stories like that are just a blast. So working with Steve is fantastic. There, just working in media in general is not an easy business. I think you can see from the layoffs at ESPN or wherever it is, you know, just that working in media is not always as rewarding as it seems, and not always as easy as I guess maybe it, as it appears. And media could, you know, there could, the world could use more people like Steve in that business, just who are willing to give people opportunities. I definitely wouldn't be doing what I was doing if Steve didn't see something in me and offer me chances to do things. So working with Steve's incredible. It's awesome. And Dallas is lucky to have him, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. When I was in college at TCU, I got really frustrated with my computer science class, and I was like, "Mom, I want to quit and be a RTVF major." And my mom sent me an article with like the average salaries of radio people. And I'm a computer science person now. So like being able to, like, the people who make it and last in the media, like, So much props to those guys. I'm just glad that someone's like Steve's around.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's a gem of a guy. If you ever get a chance to meet him, do it. If you ever get a chance to have a beer with him, just ask him about, you know, crazy stories. I think he's got a story about Greg Berhalter threatening to punch him out in a locker room back when Greg was a player. Just, you know, it's stuff like that you just, you know, he's been there. He's covered World Cups. He was at the Snow Classico. Just ask him stories. It's fantastic.
I'll put that on my list of things to do.
Yeah, make it a soccer bucket list item for sure.
That's what I was exactly going to say. All right. I think that's about all we got for this week. Tyler, thank you so much for coming on. You are, I don't know if you know this, but you're part of our birthday lineup. Our first podcast came out a year ago.
Oh, yes.
Year ago, June 15th. And we've got some vacation coming up, and so we're celebrating a little bit early. And like the past couple guests we've had on are all part of our birthday lineup, and you are one of them. And so thank you so much for taking your time to be on our show.
Well, I'm Dustin. I'm incredibly honored. So thank you very much for having me. It's been a blast.
Awesome. All right, everybody. We'll see you when we get back from vacation. Cheers.